This episode of the Pain Education Corner is sponsored by the Camella Foundation. The Camella Foundation is committed to relieving pain naturally using osteopathic healing principles. Here at the Camella Foundation, we envision a world where people achieve their maximum potential by being empowered with knowledge and skills to heal themselves and others. This information is to be used for educational purposes only, and not to be construed as medical advice. If you have any questions or concerns, please consult a licensed healthcare professional.
Hello, it's Bill, the knee pain guru, and welcome to the Pain Education Podcast brought to you by the Camella Foundation. I want to introduce a friend of mine from down under, Calvin Smith.
Hey, thank you so much.
We actually had this conversation. We were deep into a conversation right before I actually started the recording. And I was like, Calvin, hold on a second. and this is what I was sharing with you before. It's like, I like this podcast because I get to talk with cool people like yourself, buddies of mine that I train with, and they've all overcome adversity, tragedy, pain in their life somehow. And that's what I want to capture, that essence of your experience. And so I want to welcome you to the show, and I'd like you to just give an introduction.
Well, first of all, thank you for thinking of me so highly. I really don't deserve it. And for anyone who's wondering about the accent, it's Sydney via East London. Sort of, I've almost done a half and half life now, really.
Sydney, Australia, in the UK. Got it.
Via East London, Ilford, which is really Essex, but there you go. Born, I caught the very early 70s. And as I say, sort of like, and if anyone remembers back then, the world was a very interesting place, especially if you compare it to where we are now. Mm-hmm. We were in the middle of the oil crisis, as I was saying. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty much born into an environment in which people were scared. What's happening tomorrow? What's going on? People were queuing for petrol. As a little kid, I hated the dark, and there were power cuts like twice a week. Do you know what I mean? And fortunately, I didn't realize at the time, I was born into this kind of like post-war culture where many of the older people I looked up to, if I had a problem as a kid, fell over in the park, Auntie Lily or Auntie Nelly would pick you up, get a tissue out, wipe your knee and say, oh, it's all right, darling, during the war, you know, da, 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 da. So there was always in the background that, yeah, things ain't perfect, but they could be a heck of a lot less perfect than they are now.
Yeah.
So you always had that, if you like, that what psychologists would call cognitive reframing, but it was the way you were. Mm-hmm. It was kind of your way of being. You just didn't realize it. So, and I was having this conversation with my brother and another friend recently where, like I said, you'd be kids playing in the park. And most of the council workers that we were familiar with, they were war veterans. And a lot of them had PTSD, which as kids we thought was funny because they had these funny ticks and twitches. And we thought they were just being funny. We didn't realize they were traumatized. We had
struggling.
No idea.
They were struggling. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But the thing was, they made it part of who they were. So when we sat in the park and we were playing war games as kids, for them to see us probably broke their hearts, but we didn't know that. I only realized that recently. Mm-hmm. But they would say, oh, you kids, come and sit round and I'll tell you a story. And we'd go, oh, Parky's going to tell us a story. And he'd do a roll up. He'd roll up his cigarette with the two fingers that he had left. Do you know what I mean? So it was a case of, you know, and I'm going to tell you a story about how I lost these fingers and how my mate Bob died. And that was what we got as kids. And that was normal to us. So you normalized what was trauma. Mm-hmm. And it was only recently that I was talking to a friend about our first jobs in London when I was about 16, 17. And at the time, the Irish Republican Army had a campaign against the UK. And so, like, almost like clockwork, every 6 or 8 weeks, you know, you'd be sitting at work, you know, tapping away, bang, my building would shake and I'd go, oh, not again. Ah, oh, the army are going to be outside. Oh, I might as well just stay here and work an extra hour.
Mm.
You know, or you'd be on the underground and the train would stop and all the lights would go off, bearing in mind that you're 60 feet under the streets of London. And you'd hear this voice go, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, there's a bomb threat in the station ahead. We're going to have to stop the train. And as there are two trains backed up behind us, what we're going to do is put the trains back to back and you're going to hold hands with, you know, someone who's less fortunate than you. And you're going to walk back through the train. Then we're going to climb down onto the tracks, which have been turned off. Then we're going to walk the half a kilometre back to the last station and climb up onto the, and we go, oh, not again. And then you get someone, oh, it's all right. It's not as bad as during the war.
Yeah.
So you learn to reframe. Mm-hmm. And we had that older generation who passed those skills down. And we didn't see it for what it was at the time. So I really do feel sorry for younger generations who never had the opportunity. Because reframing emotional pain, reframing physical pain, if you can work with your perception and give that pain a significance, give that pain a meaning, oftentimes it doesn't just help you deal with the pain. You can get something akin to what some would call a post-traumatic growth, where the pain can drive you. So you can either be a victim of it, or you can use it as a type of, as a form of fuel. And I found that quite early in life, because I found I didn't have much choice. It's either that or go mad, right?
Right.
And you use it as a form of fuel. But you do need constant reminders, because you go through these traumatic experiences, these growing pains on a regular basis, if you decide to grow. Mm-hmm. And that's a very big if.
Right.
Because a lot of people get to a certain stage in life and they go, oh, I've done this, I've achieved this, oh, I'll put my feet up. And then they say to themselves, shit, why is life so painful?
Mm-hmm.
That's because they've stopped growing. They've stopped taking life's challenges on. Mm-hmm. And they're only challenges if you don't want them or if you haven't chosen them. Mm-hmm. And it's like the old saying, a bad surprise is only a bad surprise if you don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't frame it positively, and that's always a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is down to, if you can get your head straight, you can get your mind right, you'd be surprised what you can reframe. And I often quote Viktor Frankl as a very good example of that.
Man's Search for Meaning, that book.
Yeah, I mean, if you can watch your family being murdered and your relatives and, you know, people in your community dying in front of you and say, oh, that's, you know, that's unfortunate. If I turn this in on myself, how long am I going to last?
Mm-hmm.
My option is give this meaning, give this significance, and use that to drive me. Mm-hmm. And he did some amazing work once he got out of a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he documented what happened to people. And, you know, this is the sort of stuff that I think should be taught at schools. And so I occasionally do that. I get invited to talk at schools and colleges and
mm-hmm.
and occasionally the odd, you know, corporate, you know, lunch meeting, I stand up there and, you know, spout my junk. People find it useful occasionally.
Mm.
You know, it is what it is.
So your background, you're an engineer. You're also, you're a STEM instructor, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Russian martial arts.
An interesting bone of contention recently. So I was, when I left school, you couldn't do computer science because it wasn't on the curriculum at college.
Okay.
So I actually studied electronic engineering, and it was the year after that the BTEC offered computing as a subject you could study. And I actually was lucky. I got an industrial traineeship with a company called IBM. So I worked from the South Bank of London next to the National Theatre. And had a wonderful manager, Colin Woodhouse, who one day said to me, oh, Calvin, this course has come out for something called the IBM PC. I think it might go somewhere. It looks like a promising technology. Would you like to do the course? And I went, yeah, don't mind if I do. And that launched my career.
Uh-huh.
Because at the time, IBM, you were electronic typewriters, telephone exchanges, and photocopiers. So as an IBM engineer, I would actually carry around a tool case with a hammer in it and spanners. Seriously.
Huh.
Yeah. You know, so walking around all the banks in London and, you know, I looked after the Russian embassy, the American embassy. That was fun at that mm-hmm. age. I thought this was an embassy. Wow, why has it got an army barracks underneath it?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of cool stuff.
Yeah.
And because of I had a pretty rough time as a kid, like as a little, I was a small kid, man. Smallest in my school until the day I left. I used to get beat up and bullied all the time. And so I developed a small guy complex, which gave me a very dark side, which I quite enjoyed, actually, because it kind of became my friend. Mm-hmm. It kept people away from me. But I realized pretty early on, you're not going to go life. No, I instinctively knew where that would take me. And then one day, a friend of mine, Tony, said, oh, Cal, I've heard of this Korean karate class. And I went, the Koreans do karate? And he went, yeah. And I was a Bruce Lee kid, right? I'd seen the Dragon at least once, you know, and I had a little bit of an afro. So I went, yeah, I can do that. So I just went along to my first Taekwondo class and got kind of addicted. And then a few weeks later, my mum said, you've got to take your little brother. And I was like, no, it's mine. So he went off and became like British champion and fought at the world championships. Oh, and geez. I was too short to do Taekwondo, really. So I just like fighting. Mm-hmm. So I just did that whole round the world fighting thing while maintaining a career in technology, which took me into finance mm-hmm. and which got me doing government work as well and running projects for financial institutions, government institutions, both, you know, here and then sorry, in the UK, then eventually, you know, here as well. So it's mm-hmm. been fun. I've led a multi-channeled life,
mm-hmm.
which has been so fruitful and interesting. And it's like, I think, not Bill Gates, Mr. Apple said, you can't connect the dots.
Steve Jobs.
Looking forward, you have to look backwards.
Was that Steve Jobs you were?
Yes, I think it was Steve Jobs, I'm paraphrasing. But basically, look, if you have that momentum going forward, you don't actually have to know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
Genetically, you have a predisposition towards certain things. And if you can feel your gut, and that's where Systema really comes in. Mm-hmm. And where it's very useful as a teaching modality, methodology, both for, you know, in colleges, schools, and in the corporate space. In the corporate space, it works exceptionally well because where you're doing the internal stuff, if I went in and said, hey, guys, we're going to do a breathing class, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, God, not this bloody yoga hippie stuff. Oh.
Yeah.
And the eyes roll and they start, then, you know, the crackberries and the iPhones come out. But mm-hmm. if I turn around to them and say, hey, look, I was taught this by Russian special forces guy, the phones go in the pocket and they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Then I can talk to them about heart rate variability, breath work. Mm. And I'm a heart math advocate, have been for many years now. So I can actually get out an iPad, hook it up to a projector and show them how their emotions and self-regulation have a massive impact on their cognitive function.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, be they left brain, be they right brain, they've got something they can buy into.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with dealing with pain, if you can't communicate with your parasympathetic nervous system, it's a non-starter. And yeah. we do live in a culture, especially in the West, where that sort of stuff is looked at as foo-foo, right up until you get chronic pain mm-hmm. or a deep, significant emotional issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and then that stuff becomes, you know, front and center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, even to the point where there's the comprehensive warrior fitness program run by the US Defense Force. And they actually use HeartMath as one of their frontline tools in dealing with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about, you know, all this foo-foo stuff. There's enough science in it now that people are saying, oh yeah, we are organic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
in nature. Who knew? We all did.
Yeah. I think you're bringing up a point where there's this balance in life.
Yeah,
that we don't allow from a Western perspective, mm. we don't allow that aspect of who we are to be okay in a way, you know, it's yeah. like, and it locks people into this box that actually creates their pain that they can't get out of that box in order to relieve their pain. Because if they go there, that's somehow not allowed.
Yeah. And look, and I'll be honest, I'll be flat out there honest with you, even, you know, up to quite recently with me, I mean, you don't realize how much is in that little black box of your emotional pain until you start poking it. And it really is a Pandora's box. And it's not like you open it once and I am free and Pegasus flies out. Hell no.
Yeah.
Each stage of life you go through requires that you dig into that box even deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you develop further skills, you know, cognitive abilities and levels of emotional awareness, which take you to the next level in life.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not looking for it, it will come and find you.
It
that's
does.
What a lot of pain is. That is literally what a lot of pain is. It's your either lack of willingness or inability to look into yourself and say, what is this pain trying to tell me? Mm-hmm. And the more you ignore it, the louder it will get. And I've seen people ignore their pain and end their lives because of it. And I've seen people ignore their pain and then life ends itself in them because of it. I've seen it happen both ways. You know, and I've also had calls from people at strange hours of the morning, night, day, or, you know, or on bloody Boxing Day, in the middle of Boxing Day brunch, where, you know, I met you at a seminar X years ago. You don't remember me, but I was the guy. And invariably I go, oh, no, I remember you. And, you know, it's the... You know, I'm in a car on the edge of a cliff. This has happened and I can't cope anymore. And I'm like, oh, okay. Right. Where are you? What are you doing? And you help them as much as you can. And look, and I find that, especially with guys, because the system and health principles are very easy to subscribe to.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of guys, for some reason, and I can understand why, I've done it myself, you can identify with the pain. So if you're given pain as a gateway to address your pain, that actually works.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason, we believe we have to pay a price for our freedom.
Yeah.
Our culture does that for some weird, bizarre reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you have two options. There is you, and you can get rid of the pain with comfort, or you can get rid of the pain with pain. And most of the time, or like it's in the Western mentality that we have to push through pain to get out of pain.
Yeah.
I'd like for you to kind of go into the nuance of how do you know if you're pushing through pain, like in systema, that is actually going to release the pain, and pushing through pain, which is actually making the pain worse.
That is an interesting one.
Because one is self-abuse, right?
One is self-flagellation, 100%. Yeah. And what you're doing is you're investing in your pain. You're trying to justify your pain as opposed to solve it.
Right.
That is one way you can look at it. From a physical level, if it's a healthy pain, it should be a pain you can laugh at and laugh with.
Mm-hmm.
Example being, many of my private students, in fact, if I'm honest with you, all of my private students, when they call me, I usually turn them down a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll come back to you 18 months later. I'm ready to do anything. And I go, anything? And they say, yeah. And I said, well, okay, well, you're going to drink black coffee for 2 weeks. And they go, what? And I'll go, okay, see ya. What do you mean? And I'm like, okay, there's resistance there. No, I'm not going to teach you or work with you, because it is a matter of working with someone.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll drink the black coffee and I'll get these messages. Oh, you F of the son of a blah, 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 blah. And I'll go, I'll get these messages on my phone and I'll go, good. They're learning to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's the, okay, and now you're going to have cold showers, or at least the last 30 seconds of your shower is going to be cold. And then I'll get the, oh, you black son of a, blah, blah, and I'll go, good, you're learning to deal with it. And then a week or so later, I'll get the message, hey, Calvin, and I'll go, uh-huh, and I'll go, I can't sleep without a cold shower. And I'll go, And then he'll go, you know what? What? And they'll go, you know the cold showers? And I'll say, yeah. They go, I actually find them quite calming. Yep. So they'll realize, once you learn to laugh at your pain, on the other side, it's kind of like you have to go up to it and you have to realize how much of that pain is your own perception, what you're projecting onto it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword. It's the person's ability to let go of it or inquire into why are they doing it to themselves? Because a lot of the pain you're doing to yourself, it's something you're not prepared to let go of. I mean, when you look at it, the percentage of people who basically die, or I should say really kill themselves, unnecessarily, because they'll go to a physician, he'll say, maybe you've got type 2 diabetes. If you make these lifestyle changes, we can pretty much, over time, fix you, address what your ailment is. I think it's type 2. And 80% of people won't make the changes. And they'll lose a toe, they'll lose a limb, or ultimately give their lives away. I'll have to double check the statistics, but I know it's an alarming number of people. And that's because at some level, they identify with the pain so much that it's who they are. And that's half the problem. Because if you don't have a purpose in life, and that's a really big deal, if you don't give yourself a reason, you'll go, well, I'll hang on to the pain because it's a familiar friend. It's something I'm familiar with. So it's helping people. If you just show people that in themselves, a lot of the time they're like, I'm all good. And they're off. But some people do need, a lot of people do need to be walked through that. And it's more about their assessing their readiness to go on that journey.
What do you think differentiates the person who's willing to do that journey and who's not?
Purpose.
Purpose. So it comes outside of themselves or?
No, it's genetically, it has to be in you that you have a, so for example, you can talk to someone about smoking and you'll say, you do know smoking's not the best thing for you, right? And they'll go, oh, yeah, no. Well, have you tried giving it up? Oh, yeah, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you'll go, okay, okay. And then you'll say something like, do you have any kids? And they'll say, oh, I've got this wonderful little daughter. She's 3. And I'll say, fine, we'll go home to her and explain to her, look her in the eye and tell her that daddy's killing himself. And these guys will get angry. What do you mean? I'll say, well, that's what you're doing. And you're obviously okay with it. You know, suck on that next time you put a fag into your mouth.
And do you think, where's the disconnect? It's a level of awareness that they're not connecting with what they're doing with the result.
And that's why the vagal tone work is so good, because you'll meet a lot of people who are disconnected emotionally. They have very low vagal tone, very low emotional. I mean, that mind-body connection is...
We gotta break down vagal tone because I think there's gonna be people that may not know what vagal tone is.
Okay, 10th cranial nerve, nerve that grows out of the side of your skull, down your neck, forms a root ball, goes into the heart, across the the lungs and down into stomach. So basically, the part of you that when you get the shivers, that's your vagus nerve.
Got it.
So it basically is that that awareness, that feeling of self. Okay. So if you like, that's your information superhighway that nature's given us to tell us what our environment's doing. So if you're the kind of guy that walks into a bar or the kind of woman that walks into a bar and you get the shivers, someone's looking at me. And you look around and there's someone looking at you. Hey, welcome to your vagus nerve. And so, you know, when you're talking about the heart rate variability, physiological circuitry for your heart and your lungs and the rest of your nervous system having a little powwow and saying, right, fight or flight, what does that mean? You know, how do I respond at a low, you know, sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system level? So literally the hardwire, your hardwiring of how your body functions. And then your emotional awareness and cognitive connection to that. Which ironically, well, not ironically, which the only way you can interface with that consciously is through your breathing, which comes back to breath work, which is why I give my little students, 3 and 4 years old, bubbles to blow and get them to do tactical breathing or square breathing. Or 4x4, or whatever you want to call it. And then I'll be talking to someone at CBA, someone at Westpac Bank, or wherever, or whichever institution, or whichever sports team they play for. And I'll, hey, guys, we're going to do square breathing. What? Oh, okay. Oh, yes, guys. Guys, we're going to do tactical breathing. Okay. So we're going to blow bubbles. Okay. So you give them an emotional, because that's what they need. They need an emotional buy-in. So then you get them sitting there blowing bubbles in the park. And they're like, wow, I feel better. And you know what? My pain's going. And you'll go, ooh. And then they'll say a few weeks later, And you know what? My wife and kids are getting on better with me. And you go, oh, really? And they'll say, do you think it's got something to do with the Sistema? And I'll go, I don't know. What do you think? And they'll go, nah. And I go, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But as long as they feel better, who cares?
Right. No, that's brilliant. It's good stuff. And I think it really, it leads to, just like you were saying, a level of awareness, a level of connection with all those different aspects of who we are as human beings.
Mm.
Are we moving more towards tension, holding our breath, or are we relaxing our body and being more easy to get along with, just more comfortable in general in our physical body?
100%. I mean, I love it when, you know, students used to bring their children, especially their babies, to my class, because we'd have a hardcore tactical class, you know, big men doing men stuff and striking, because everyone likes striking, right? Because, you know, because it's good for the body, teaches you to be soft. Or if you want to self-flagellate and hurt yourself, sure, we'll hit you. It's up to you how you interpret the stimulus, literally. So, you know, we'd have, you know, sorry, mate, I've brought the baby in. Is it okay if the baby put the baby in the stroller at the end of the class? I'd say, no. The baby will run the class. And they'd be like, what? And I'd get the guys to all lie down and you get the baby to crawl across everyone. And you will watch these big grown guys soften.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and tears might come out because they're connecting with a part of themselves they've neglected for donkey's years. And I've actually had seminars where guys have actually, you know, they've been lying there and all of a sudden these tears come out and they're going, what's happening to me? What's happening to me? What have you done to me? And the anger comes out because they don't understand. And you're like,
right,
no, that's your emotional self, mate.
Yeah.
You just don't talk to it very often.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you've been in Sistema for a long time.
Mm.
And I started a while ago myself.
Yeah.
So I've had a few punches and a few of those punches hurt more than other punches.
Yeah.
And they evoke
you, huh?
Pardon?
But it's kind of up to you, isn't it? What you think it means.
No, even on the other side of what I think it means,
yeah,
there's a releasing, like my body's holding tension for whatever it is, you know, and it's and how different parts of the body will evoke different emotions.
And
I know the person who's hitting me, because I've had some of my best friends punch me, and I know there is no malicious intent. Like, I know it's all me, but it's been like, whatever it was, it's like, boom,
I feel you. I mean, like, we were fortunate enough to have Aslan reach over, you know, Sistema Talanov. And we love those guys. They're so beautiful. They, you know, they're really so humble and share everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And at one point, you know, we were training and I said, hey guys, everyone, let Aslan punch you. Let him really strike you, deep strike. And everyone's like, what? And I said, yeah. And so I said, look, just like me. And I stood up and I went, Aslan, please do me the honor of nice deep strike. And he struck me and everything went white.
Yeah.
And like literally everything went white. And I was like, and it was like, beep.
Yeah.
And then you come back, right? And it was like, holy shit. I didn't know I was holding on to stuff.
Yeah.
But those guys, I mean, like Aslan and, you know, and Valentin, exceptionally highly skilled guys, you know. But you can tell by who they are. You just look at their eyes and the softness, the gentle power that they personify, because it's who you are, right? It's not who you pretend to be. It's who you are. And that's really the crux of it. We live in a culture which everyone is pretending to be someone or something rather than being, because being scares the hell out of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Being takes balls, man. It really does. And that's why I like training with babies, like training with kids, because they haven't learned to fob themselves off yet. But they soon pick it up from their parents, and that's when all the problems start. And all the bad mojo comes across, all the bad negative conditioning, you know, generational stuff tends to slip in, you know, the It's like the old the monkey experiment, if you're familiar with that one.
With the sweet potatoes?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell the story, because maybe people didn't hear it.
Well, it's like the one you can look up on YouTube, because there are some really good analogies there that pretty much tell us a very similar story.
We'll put the video link in the description of but I want you to tell it as well.
Well, it's basically along the line, I'll paraphrase, where basically if you have a group of maybe like four or five monkeys, and you have a banana at the top of a ladder, and the monkeys have to compete for the banana. And what will happen is the monkey that will get the banana will be punished by the others. Mm-hmm. And then you'll get to the point where the monkeys will look at the banana and say, I'm not going to go there, because if I do, bad stuff's going to happen to
me. Oh, the water. Didn't they spray cold water on the other monkeys?
They did have an experiment with water. Mm-hmm. But I do like the monkeys on the ladder reaching for the banana, because it's very easy to visualize. Mm-hmm. And also, when people visualize it, they visualize it comically, mm-hmm. which makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Because when people think of cold water, how do they react viscerally?
They shiver. They want. Exactly. They can feel it. Yeah, yeah.
In their mind, they picture an uncomfortable experience. Mm-hmm. So what you're trying to explain to them now has a feeling associated with it. Mm-hmm. So kind of Sistema 101. So mm-hmm. what I prefer to do is use examples that bring humor and warmth. Mm-hmm. So that the subconscious self is open. Mm-hmm. So I like to teach with humor and use humorous examples, because it softens the body. Mm-hmm. So I will say the monkeys, one of the monkeys tried to grab the banana and the other monkeys scorned it. Mm-hmm. And then even if you change those monkeys out, you put a fresh monkey in, a monkey will go, oh, look, banana, will go up and get punished and go, well, I've not done anything wrong. But so what you end up with is a meme. A cultural meme mm-hmm. of I can't go for what I want because it's bad and I don't know why, but everyone will punish me for it. Mm. So after a couple of generations, little Jamie says, Dad, I want to travel the world. And Dad says, oh, you can't do that. Why? Because your Uncle Cyril, 15 generations, he tried it and something nasty happened. Do you know what I mean? So we take on these cultural significances which are false, mm-hmm. and then we become afraid to even challenge them. And if you're not careful, you will compile all of this cultural stuff and believe that's who you are. Mm-hmm. And all it is software settings. Mm-hmm. So your human being potentially becomes a person. You're like an iPhone. There's an app for that. All of your cognitive states are apps. Uh-huh. And you can choose them. That's how hypnotherapy works. So I went off and studied that for a while, which was great fun. Self-hypnosis is a thing. Just use emotions. It's quicker and easier. Mm-hmm. Cognitive reframing. It's quicker and easier. And also, that's a very good way of dealing with pain and discomfort as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Pain Education Corner. If you have a special talent or skill to relieve pain and you'd like to become a guest on our show, visit us at thecamellafoundation.org/interview. Help us spread the word on eliminating pain and suffering in the world. That's thecamellafoundation.org/interview.
Do you have a way a person could begin to become conscious of these memes or these patterns within themselves that are limiting their experiences?
Of course. Do things you don't like. Do things with low consequence that you don't normally do. Mm-hmm. Or have been told not to do. Because what you'll find is you will justify these things with a cognitive, logical part of your brain that really make absolutely no sense. Mm. So good things to do that I give people to do are things like the cold showers. It's a great example. No. Why not? Oh, I can't. Why can't you? Well, I can't. Okay, well, if you did, what would happen? Well, And I go, there you go. That's an example.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just get them to do something that they wouldn't otherwise do. And the more opposed they are to it, and then get them to say, okay, well, if you weren't opposed to it and you did it and you looked back on the experience, how, what would it be? And so basically what you're doing is you're hacking the brain. You're removing the precondition. And what you'll find is the brain will then jump forward because, look, because a lot of what your subconscious is doing, it's trying to stop you from hurting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can tell it that in a future version of yourself, you've already done it and you're still alive, it will go, okay, that's it. And you've done it. Literally, you've rewritten. And then if you look at yourself retrospectively, your mind will say, I am my mind. And I project myself into myself because that's how the human mind works. You are what you think you are. Mm-hmm. And any psychologist will tell you that. Yeah, if you walk down the road and say, mate, you are what you think you are, they'll go, you're talking a load of crap, mate. But that's what cognitive therapy is, and that's what hypnotherapy does. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's the interesting thing about human cognition and the mind. Whatever you think to be true is true, and until you change your mind. That's it.
I've had multiple experiences where I remember back in college when I walked into my first martial arts class. It was a judo class, and they were doing demonstrations, and they were throwing people, and they were hitting the ground, and I'm going, oh my gosh, that would hurt a lot. Yeah. And then I learned how to fall, and it wasn't so bad. And then I saw them choking each other, and I was like, I don't even like wearing a tie. So how can I stand being choked? Yet there was, if you break it down into baby steps, and that's something that I really liked about Sistema was how they would, the masters, Vlad, Mikhail, and other instructors, how they would take this task, this activity that we're doing, and they would break it down into a little piece right here. Yeah. And you begin doing that. And then they give you another little piece, another little piece, another little piece. Before you knew it, you're doing this task. And it wasn't that big of a leap for your brain to do it because it was broken down into bite-sized chunks that were
Definitely. Or simply make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the stuff that I would teach. You know, I've worked with a couple of tactical guys. And the stuff that I would teach them, I would teach it. I mean, I pinch a leaf out of Andre Karimov's book. And we've trained with Andre a few. We've been fortunate enough to host him here on a couple of occasions. And, you know, you'll watch him. The stuff that he'll teach to tactical guys is the same stuff he teaches preschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the most fundamental level, you're dealing with the same part of the human, that child, that subconscious inner self, whatever you want to call it. But the thing is, as we get older, you put more and more layers of BS and conditioning on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
So literally, I will train everyone like they're 2 years old. It's just easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I can ignore their stuff because dealing with their stuff, really, I don't have any interest in it. I don't have the time for it. You don't get anywhere, especially if you're working with these hardcore corporate alpha types. You know, if you can give them a visualization or a scenario to work with, and then you're teaching them the same stuff. You know, because at the fundamental level, you're working with, you know, that I said, the parasympathetic nervous system in many cases. So you can call it a chicken if you want. It makes no difference.
Right.
You're just giving them permission to go there. And that's one of the things that makes me laugh. People seem to think they need permission to be healthy and happy. And you tell them that there's no precondition to happiness, right? And if you're happy, that's the whole idea. People go, oh, but I'm chasing success. Okay, what does success mean? Oh, it means I'll be happy. Well, just be happy now. I can't. Okay. Yeah. And then if you meet anyone who's successful, they'll tell you, you know what? I just enjoyed it. I just got into it, mate. But that was hard work. Was it? And when I look at some of the things I did in martial arts, and I was speaking to my brother again recently, he has his own annual tournament that he invites other clubs to. And we were talking to other instructors about the stuff we did as kids. And some of the people that were listening to us, we were laughing and, oh my God, do you remember? I mean, broke our feet and yeah, and I broke my toe. And then I had five more fights with a broken foot. Oh, it was so much fun. And people are looking at you terrified. Mm-hmm. And they're like, are you guys insane? Are you psychopaths? And you go, no, it's because we enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like when we were kids and we'd go to, you know, in England, we'd go to Margate and or Brighton and you're kids and it's freezing cold and it's English, right? England, the water's murky and the sea's cold and it's raining and your mum's got a big thick coat on and you're in your underpants running into the ocean, laughing, going, Mum, can I have an ice cream? And there's snot running down the nose and your lips are blue, but you're having the best time.
Yeah.
A lot of it is literally you have to choose, because if you don't choose, that in itself is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And in dealing with pain, in dealing with adversity, in, you know, leading a team of executives, of running a business, in running a family, in pulling yourself out of a deep, you know, emotional hole, it's mm-hmm. all the same. You mm-hmm. have to make that decision. And once you've made that decision, bang, things will incrementally get better
mm-hmm.
because we're engineered that way.
Mm-hmm.
Nature's pretty cool. You know what I mean? She's been doing trial and error for a very long time.
Yep.
And in quite a specific direction. That's why we call it evolution and not devolution.
Mm-hmm.
Though stagnation, in effect, is devolution.
Mm-hmm.
You have this thing called entropy, which is mm-hmm. a matter of physics. And that applies to all of us, all systems, be they organic or otherwise.
Mm.
You know, and it really is that. And, you know, it comes down to whether you want to look at it from a scientific, you know, Western viewpoint or an Eastern philosophical spiritual viewpoint. Look, it's the same thing. It's just the label you put on it. Mm-hmm. But we're at a point in history now where everyone's starting to cross the divide and meet in the middle. Carl Sagan did mm-hmm. years ago. He was one of my favorite, you know, cosmologists,
mm-hmm.
Physicists. I loved the guy. And he said it, you know, donkeys ago, the universe is mostly benign. It really doesn't care about you or what you do. You're not that important, but you give yourself meaning and you give your pain meaning, hopefully, because if you don't, you'll just say, oh, poor me. And mm-hmm. then you get what you get.
Yeah. I see a lot of people. Well, I work primarily with people with knee pain online, and a lot of them get to this long, slow decline with their knees getting worse. They get arthritis, they get bone on bone. And then pretty soon they're a perfect candidate for knee replacement surgery. And they'll say they tried everything, but their joints are wearing away and they're in pain on a daily basis. What would you say to somebody in that type of situation? I mean, purpose, like you were saying, that's going to make a big deal.
I would say that after about 32 years of Taekwondo and open styles competition, I had what we call Taekwondo knees.
Okay.
It sounded like I was walking on a box of dominoes when I got up in the morning. And it would take me about 5 minutes to put my feet on the ground, because broken toes and broken feet, they catch up with you after a while.
They do.
So it used to take me like 5 minutes to put my shoes on to get to the office. And I would have this dainty, I would walk to the bus stop like a ballerina, because my feet bloody hurt. All my toes pointed in different directions. So it was literally a case of, you know what, I'm going to take responsibility for this. I'm not going to just hope that it goes away, because no, it won't.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to find the most pleasurable way to deal with it and the most constructive way to deal with it, because otherwise I'll look at it as a chore and then I won't do it.
Mm.
Because why would I do it? You know, any idiot would tell you that. So, okay, I'm going to make it a positive, fun thing. Maybe you have god kids who you want to jog along the beach with. So maybe you get them to participate with you. And then you say, you know what? I'm setting an example to my godkids. Now that means more than my knee discomfort. So you give it a meaning, you give it a significance, and you give it a positive purpose. And that's why I came up with the whole thing about warrior's path. If you choose the warrior's path, the higher way, a lot of the me, poor me falls away. Because you're giving your situation a significance that goes way beyond you. You know? So when you are walking down the road, people are saying, oh, what a, you know, yeah, and you're waving back. And this people are saying, you know, what a champion. And you're like, no, I'm just doing my thing. And people say, no, but you don't understand, mate. Seeing you do that inspires me. And that inspires you in return. And you're getting that dopamine hit. You're giving yourself more meaning, yeah. Sense of purpose. Exactly. So that's why I say it really comes back down to purpose. If you do things on purpose, it makes a heck of a difference. It makes all the difference. You know, so you really do have to reframe it. Otherwise, you'll go into that little black hole of self and self-pity and I don't want to do it. And then you get what you get. Which doesn't help anyone.
Right. I think speak to... Because there's times I feel like like something happened in my life, you know, a good friend dies, whatever the situation is, there's something significant. What is there a gauge you go by at the amount of time you give yourself to process that experience? Because sometimes being down is not necessarily a bad thing. It's a process that I think your body needs to go through.
Yeah, you have to look. It's like everything in life is a cycle. Everything in the natural world is a cycle. We got days, weeks, months, years.
Yep.
Sun goes up, goes down. Moon comes up, goes down. Tide goes in, tide goes out. And you know, and as organisms, you know, as products of nature, we are the same. So you know, I've lost a few friends. I mean, I think you know, it's kind of one of those things, right? You know, it's like was there a move? No, I think it's a Rick and Mortyism. Hey, Summer, everyone you love will die. Do you know what I mean? So, and I've lost people who have been very close to me. I've lost, you know, girlfriends, a couple actually, and, you know, real people have really meant a lot to me. So, and occasionally, you know, with digital media as it is, sometimes you'll be, and all of a sudden someone's birthday will come up. And it will be someone who died 5 or 10 years ago who was I was really close to. And then you feel that little shadow come up. But then also it will be like, oh, but I remember that time we were dancing and we danced our asses off till 4 in the morning. Jesus, we had a good time. And there was one time a girlfriend of mine, we actually were together. She was my boss's boss. And we ended up going out for a couple of years and lived together. Love her to bits. And I still think of her from time to time because we had great times. We went to Barbados together and hung out with my relatives over there. And I remember I was at her funeral. And ironically, she passed away from cancer. And I remember some of her best friends, you know, puffing on cigarettes at the funeral. Oh, we were so close. And I'm like, no, you weren't. weren't close at all. You know, and I remember putting a flower on her coffin and actually thanking her and say, honey, you've taught me the biggest lesson in life. You know, and so I you let yourself grieve because it has a purpose. It's to remind you of how fortunate you are to have met them and how fortunate you are to still be alive to grieve. So you let it happen. And then remember the good times you had. I mean, I was a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine back home, and his father died. I was invited to the wake. And this is an old Caribbean, old Jamaican guy. And this guy had a great life, man. And I remember looking into his coffin, and I swear he was laughing. I kid you not. I swear he was laughing. And I started laughing myself, going, you cheeky bugger. And then later the day when we had the funeral, and they lowered his coffin into the ground. There were these three old black guys and they were standing by the graveside, wetting themselves laughing.
Yeah.
At the funeral, crying, laughing, almost falling into the grave themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they had 4 shot glasses. And they were pouring out this Caribbean rum. And they were knocking it back. And they'd pour the 4th glass and then pour it on top of the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking to the coffin going, oh, do you remember that time we met those girls? And we went to that party? Almost falling into the coffin.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you see both sides. There's a duality to everything. That is the human condition. But then we have choice.
Mm-hmm.
Which side do you want to see?
Mm-hmm.
So in dealing with that, I keep photo archives on my phone. Mm-hmm. I have photos of people who are with me, photos of people who have gone, photos of people who have gone and they're smiling.
Mm-hmm.
We're out dancing. Because as long as you have those memories, the person's still alive, right?
Right. Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's great.
Oh, look, I learned that the hard way, bruv, believe.
I hear you. I hear. Well, that, I mean, you were saying trial and error. That's how we learn. You got to screw it up in order to know how to do it right.
Well, it's what Joseph Campbell used to say. Say yes to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, saying yes to everything can't kill you. And you can always set preconditions. And that was a big one for me. I actually gave myself that as a project because I used to watch Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. And I remember one episode where George Costanza, that character, he had a contrarian week where he said, that's it, Jerry. I'm going to say yes to everything I say no to and no to everything I say yes to. And all of a sudden, his life pivoted.
Mm.
And then you realize that if you actually do that, you'll realize that for a lot of people, 80, 90% of what you do, you're actually getting in your own way. Seriously. Mm. So oftentimes people will come to me, my life's a mess. I'll say, go to bed. Because you can't make it any worse.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And then they'll contact you a week later and they'll say, you'll never believe what happened. And I'll go, yeah.
Things got better.
Yeah, you stopped buggering in your own stuff.
Yeah. That's a brilliant piece of advice. And it's easy to gloss over that.
It's huge.
If things aren't going well, stop doing everything.
Stop doing everything. Because it can't get worse because you're doing it. You are the agent. You are the agent.
That's right.
I mean, and if you look, that's why I love Stoicism. But the thing is, Stoicism isn't very often converted into the modern era.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll tell you, chill. Hold your breath. Do nothing.
Mm.
And wait and see what happens. That's what get out of your own way means. Because you are genetically programmed to be brilliant from birth.
Mm-hmm.
Tigers don't take tiger lessons. They train, but they don't take tiger lessons. Mm-hmm. Eagles don't take eagle lessons. Wolf don't take wolf lessons, but they're pretty efficient at being what they are. We are the same. But unfortunately, culture can get in the way. If you were born in the middle of nowhere in a tribe, by 5 years old, you'd be fully self-sufficient. Look at hunter-gatherers. There's still a few of them about. When you're a kid, it's not like they wait till you're 15. No. You're out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for some reason, we think that we're born incompetent and then spend the rest of our lives acquiring stuff. And then if you're lucky, you'll get to your 50s and you'll say, why isn't my life working the way I thought it would?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just soldier on and keep smashing myself. But the smart ones say, hold on, when I look back at my life, hey, I mugged myself.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that wake up. But that's a very small percentage of people most of the time.
Mm. It's all brilliant, Calvin. Yeah, that's awesome. It's fantastic.
It's Thank just you amazingly so. Simple. That's why I keep telling people, I don't know. That's why I try not to take on students because I know bugger all. All I've done is look at my life and go, you messed up. Ah, it was you. You did that. Stop doing it.
Yeah. Calvin, we're going to wrap it up here in a minute or so, but I wanted to thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to, like a loose end we might have out there that you want to tie up?
Yeah, one last thing. Low self-esteem is an epidemic. I would say for 99.9% of the people that come to me, their problem is low self-esteem wrapped up in one parcel or another. Go and see a psychologist. There's nothing wrong with that. Or if you're fortunate enough, maybe you're in, you know, a member of a loving community. Find someone who is happy and just spend time with them. Just observe them. That is enough. You'll pick it up by osmosis. There is nothing wrong with you. We've had a wonderful, you know, there's something wrong with me culture since the 50s and 60s. There's nothing wrong with you. You're born fine.
Yeah.
But if you want to give yourself problems and label yourself, go ahead. Because this culture tends to allow you to do that because it's a great way of making money out of people. Doesn't make you very useful. So just be useful, be happy, and start there. You don't need an excuse to be happy and healthy. Just do it. Happiness, health, and success, you know, they are cognitive states. They are not things you achieve. They are mindsets. That's it. And if you want to achieve, be happy. And you know what? You'll get there. It's impossible to fail, literally, unless you sabotage yourself. That's it. I know it because I tried it. And I wish someone had told me fucking 40 years ago. It would have made, but the thing is, if they'd have told me, I wouldn't have acquired all of the wonderful experiences that I've acquired. Because those experiences help me in relating to other people. You don't understand my pain. Let me show you my scar. Oh, geez. Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
So I think in a nutshell, that would be it.
That's awesome, Calvin. I appreciate you taking the time to share with us today.
I am honored and privileged that you think I've actually got something worth listening to.
Well, I didn't say you did. I'm just saying that I'm glad you shared your time.
Ah, well, hey,
come on now.
Absolute pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. It's a privilege. I mean, look, usually, I mean, like, I get friends from the UK ring me up and say, mate, you should shut up. You're upsetting people. I'm like, I don't actually care.
Yeah.
Don't click on my face if it upsets you.
Yeah.
You know, it's that simple. It's a choice like everything else in life.
Calvin, how we have it set up with the podcast and in the Camilla Foundation, we have the ability to set it up where there'll be a button below this. If you're open for people reaching out to contacting you for consultations or something like that.
I'd love to, sure. You know, I mean, to be honest with you, my Facebook page is my diary.
Okay.
So most of what I say, look, I public, when I go through stuff, I put it out there because I really don't care. I mean, that's what the whole Warrior's Path thing is about. Wear your heart on your sleeve because that's the whole point. That is the whole point. So oftentimes, oh, I've got this problem. I say, I'll go back 3 weeks and look at my Facebook page. It's there. You know, because otherwise I'd be overwhelmed and swamped, which occasionally happens. Sure. And I do consult. It's not cheap. So what I try to do is I try to make all of my stuff available for free. That's the whole point. But, you know, hey, otherwise, but yeah, reach out.
Okay.
Or check me out at calvinsmith.com, which is my professional LinkedIn.
Yeah, we'll put all of that information down below. Please in the do. Description yeah. of Feel it. Free. We'll do that. Thank you once again.
We
appreciate it. This was fun. This
you
was fun.
Do this more often, man.
We will. We're gonna do it. You could be a regular face on the podcast if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love to. Because I mean, like, I've even rebranded the, you know, the brand. We used to be Peaceful Warriors in Training. We're now Peaceful Warriors in Active Service. It's time for us all to get out there and do stuff. And you do stuff by just being who you are. That's it. You live as an example, and you just wear your stuff on your sleeve. And when you mess up, you say, oh, that was my bad. And you change it. You know, just do the right thing. That's it. It's not hard.
Awesome.
Thanks, Calvin, Brian. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
This is Bill Paravano, the knee pain guru. Thanking you so much for being here. On behalf of the Pain Education Podcast and the Camilla Foundation, we thank you so much. And we'll see you on the next one.
Awesome.
Thank you for tuning into this week's segment of the Pain Education Corner. Join us next week for another conversation on natural healing methods to eliminate pain. To learn more about the work we do at the Camella Foundation, please visit our website at the Camella, C-O-M-E-L-L-A, foundation.org.